Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. Tonight, I'm going to have my very special co-host is here, who's here with me the first Sunday of every month, Suzette Hinton. But before we introduce her for tonight, I just want to make a few announcements. First of all, I can't believe that this is already the beginning of January, how fast time is flying. And our healing weekend is coming up in just another 8 weeks in Houston. And the healing weekends are really extraordinary for women who need to move forward, and they need the support of other women to validate their experiences and also to share their experiences to see that they're right on target with all of the rest of us who have gone through this or in all different stages. We'll have women there who are guests of the show on a regular basis, like my wonderful friend Grace from Austin, and Wendy, our wordsmith, who makes a beautiful list. And some other very wonderful, genuine, powerful women will be gathering together from not only here, but in other parts of the world as well. So if you would like to join me for the Healing Weekend, which is March 1st and March 2nd, please write a note to me at bonkaye@aol.com. That's B-O-N-K-A-Y-E @aol.com. Also, if you are listening to the show, I do want to mention that last week we had some disruptions from immature, stupid callers. So to make sure that we don't interrupt the integrity of the show, if you do want to call in, please email me first at bonkaye@aol.com and let me know what your number is and that you're legit, and I'll get you onto the show. So I do have newsletters that come out every month to give support to people who need something to hold on to each month as you're going through this process of the gay husband recovery. Please let me know, and I'm really excited over the fact that we have what I now have recalled the UK chat into the international chat, because the time here in the United States is now in the afternoon at 3:30. That means women in the United Kingdom are coming in at, 8:30. We have women coming from all over Europe, even one from the Netherlands who's visited us at, her time. So it's really nice to meet other women in other countries going through the same struggle. And for women who are home during the day and it's easier for you to come to the chat in the afternoon, it may really work better for you. So if you're interested or you need more information on how to get into our chats, please let me know and I'll send you directions. So without any further ado, I want to introduce my beautiful, wonderful, happy co-host for tonight, Suzette. Hi, Suzette.
Hi, Bonnie. Happy New Year, girl.
Same to you. And I can see it's going to be a really good New Year for you, right?
Yes, indeed.
Because you're starting it out in such a meaningful way.
Oh, yes. Great year, new beginnings.
Mm-hmm. And so for that new beginning, Suzette is starting out her year with a new engagement, right? Yeah, we have to give this a big Suzette yay. So we started talking a little bit before the show, and you said you were really surprised when this happened, right?
I was. As I was telling you earlier, I knew we were having difficulty. At least I knew I was really, it was getting to a point whenever he would leave, I would just feel so sad. And we were talking about it and everything. And I remember him saying, just trust me. And I said, well okay. And I thought maybe he was going to work something out, maybe where we could move in together.
Uh-huh.
But girl, he got on that down on that one knee with that ring in his hand. I said,
that is just so wonderful.
Yes.
The reason why I really wanted to talk to you about it tonight, You know, it's the beginning of a new year, and I think a new year should always be a time of new hope for people. I see this a lot in my chat room when women come on, or in our, we have a Facebook private page where, you know, women are posting how far they've come from a year ago and how much better they feel a year later. You know, I always say that time is a great healer. Unfortunately, you can't wish it sooner to be there than it, you know, comes on its own terms. But, you know, I tell women, if you could look a year ahead, and then I promise you in a year from now, you are going to be in a very different place. And in 2 years from now, you'll be in a much different place. That doesn't mean it's all going to be behind you or over, but you'll be in a much different place. Mm-hmm. And as far as you're concerned, I'm really excited because of the fact that, you know, you had a life where you could relate to what we've gone through since you lived it yourself. And, you know, I'm sure that during times periods, and, you know, especially people who don't know you may not realize that you were married not only once to a gay man, but remarried him, believing that he had changed because of, you know, your religious upbringing and beliefs.
Right,
only to have
to
find out one more time that, you know, it is what it is and it's not going to change. And when you left that relationship, did you feel that at some point, you know, you're going to meet somebody who's wonderful or not?
I didn't. I was just too much on survival mode.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, it was such a dramatic and even more traumatic the second time because I was having to overcome feeling, you know, stupid to the second power. So it took me a little bit longer to forgive myself for going into it a second time. And I had made up in my mind, however, that this time I was going to ask the hard questions. And instead of having my eyes wide shut, my eyes were going to be wide open. Because I knew when I left the second time, I was like, God, if you get me out of this a second time, I promise you, I am not coming back. And so I realized that by saying that it was more than a person. And after I got past losing everything except for my son and having to rebuild that life, it took a while for me to get past survival mode and adjusting to single parenting and all the ups and downs of his middle school and teen years before I could really start looking at myself and my own life and where I wanted it to go again. So it took a while for my heart to really open and for me to really get to a place where not only did I long in secret for someone, but I could actually get busy in consciously, you know, advancing that, whether it was dating again, that type of thing. Because I didn't do a lot of dating when my son was at home because I just didn't want to introduce a lot of uncles, you know, a lot of uncles into his life.
I think we all go different ways on that. I mean, I was very much the way you were, whatever relationships I had as my kids were getting older because I didn't have anything for 11 years at all. I was raising the kids, going to school, getting my degrees, putting myself on track. And, you know, when my heart opened, you know, they were a little older by that time, but I didn't want somebody coming in and interfering with the interaction. They'd been with me for so long on their own. So
yeah.
I felt very much the way you do. And I think that last week when they had Dr. Hooper here, you know, who's our guest on the last Sunday of every month, and Brian's really wonderful, but he brought up some really good points. I wonder if, you know, you agree with this. He says in the beginning, at least your first year, you should start really dating yourself and start finding out what you like about you, what you don't like about you, just like if you were dating someone else. And those things that you don't like, you know, those are the things you really need to work on. You know, if you make decisions too quickly, if you don't like the way that you're feeling, you know, doing things, that you can really not be in a position to date somebody else until you know yourself well enough. But I see women in our situation, you know, they jump in many times, not all of them, of course, but some, because they've been so neglected emotionally, sexually, you know, intimately, that they haven't had the intimacy in their marriages. And they're so, you know, they're like kids, like their ex-husbands are kids in a candy store. They're out there, too, shopping, shopping, shopping for somebody who they want to love them because they haven't been loved properly for years. And that's often where I think the mistake comes in, is jumping out there looking for someone before you even know who you are. And let me ask you this question. When you were married, you know, both times to the same man, but I know for me, I feel that you lose who you are. Mm-hmm. You know, you're always trying to make the marriage better because it's never right. So you're always trying to find ways to make him happy or make him love you more. And, you know, of course, there is no way, but you become somebody who you're not, so you really don't know who you are. Did you find that?
I found that to be very true. And actually, in answering that question, I'm kind of addressing what you were saying also that your guest had said. I think the year after, just to amend it a little bit, I don't think we're really in a position after we come out of something this traumatic to start talking about what we like and what we don't like, because it's like you're in shock, you're stunned. It's almost like your wounds are so inflamed that you really can't quite get enough of a gauge on things to even do that kind of conscious work. I think that when you first come out of it, you're just breathing. You go from gasping for air to learning how to breathe. You know, first and
I agree.
Get stable. And that's why I was saying coaching is such a help in helping to get stable. And then once you get stable where you don't feel so out of sorts, then you can start saying, okay, now I can do my internal CSI investigation. Now I can start excavating what I like and what I don't like, what I want to do, what I don't want to do. But when you first come, it's almost like going through a place, something where your ship breaks apart. All you can do is hold on to the planks until it brings you to shore. That is an assignment, you know, and once you get to shore and you kind of gasping, you realize you made it through. You see, you check around and see what you got. You know, am I still here? Have I lost any limb? What washed up on the shore with me? You know, just kind of doing that for a minute. Then you can start the task of, okay, let's see what I want to keep, what I don't want to keep, what's real, what's false, what I like, what I don't like. So I agree with him, but I don't think that first year you're really in a mental state to be able to do it unless you've gotten some help first.
Yeah, well, I don't think he necessarily meant the first year. I think he meant, like, in the beginning, you had to first know yourself before you can even think about considering somebody else.
Gotcha.
And I think another
gotcha.
Problem is, to be honest, and I really thought about it for a while because I thought of something else. I don't know if you agree with this. But, you know, when you're in these marriages and you're feeling so depressed and you're feeling that your self-esteem is so low and you really lose who you are to start with, that whatever person you became is not the person you were to start with. But then I'm thinking also that sometimes maybe you didn't really even like that person you were before you got into the relationship, which may be why you got into it. I know that a lot of our women really, you know, starting with me, I'm number one on the line of low self-esteem, that a lot of decisions I made in my life were based on my own low self-esteem. And when you have low self-esteem and make your decisions based on that, it's very rare that you're going to have the opportunity to ever be happy because it just doesn't work out that way. More than likely, you're going to find the predator or somebody who's going to just drag you right down because they're looking for women who don't have the self-esteem to stand up to them and say, no, I will not, you know, do this. I'm not going to live this way, and so it's not going to be for you. It has to be for both of us. But when you don't have high self-esteem, you're really willing to go along with anything to have somebody love you. So I didn't love myself that much to start with. And I think maybe that's why it took me so long, you know, before I was ready to meet somebody again. I had to first learn how to love me. If you don't love yourself, you're never going to have that high self-esteem. And I think that's really the key to it. Do you?
I do. I think that the relationship only magnifies what was already broken.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't blame my ex for magnifying what was broken. I don't blame him for that. And any relationship, and I think you hit the nail on the head. I don't think a lot of times we come out of these situations and we blame them for everything. And when the truth of the matter was, we just didn't know how to recognize brokenness because we were broken.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And when you're broken and you go with a man like this, you know, who we marry, they're going to break you more.
Exactly.
They're not going to build you up.
No,
right?
Not at all. Not at all. Now, I have to say, he didn't build me up when it came to the part of me that yearned for intimacy, that yearned to be seen, to be heard, and that I mattered as a partner, as an intimate partner in every sense of the word. What it did magnify, however, was in other areas, because we were an indomitable force when it came to business.
Uh-huh.
So it magnified my business prowess. It magnified my ability to multitask.
Uh-huh.
But it did not magnify my womanliness, my vulnerability. It did not embrace my feminine spirit. It did not embrace my womanliness. It did not embrace me as a sexual being that needed to be honored in that way. It didn't honor me in that way. Not at all.
And I'm not saying that everything is horrible in every marriage by
mm-hmm.
any stretch of the imagination. I mean, there are some couples who have nice relationships, but that's what they are, nice relationships. They're not necessarily
yeah.
marriages. You know,
exactly.
We're willing to redefine who we are and what we're doing, what we want, when we can't get what we want and learn to accept it. But that's not really what, you know, marriage should be about. It's about two people building a life together and striving together like you're doing now. But
yeah.
the point is that, you know, people lose, I think, their perceptions of what they should really be looking for when they can't get it. And they just kind of
yeah.
shut down. And then they justify it in other ways. I'm not saying you're justifying it, don't get me wrong. But they're saying, well, okay, so maybe we don't have it so bad in that way, but look how good we get together in this way, and no couple's totally happy or totally perfect, and look how, you know, and then the husbands try to sell us the line, look how many people are having sex at the age of 50 anyway, and I don't know that
yeah.
many people. Once you're married a long time, you're not looking for that, and why are you always focused on the wrong things? And you start, you know, start buying into this stuff, and you start losing who you are. And you're right, you shut down because you've lost your femininity. You don't know where to find it because you're certainly never going to find it with a gay man. Would you say that's true?
No, you're not. You're not going to find out how lovely you are, how sexy you are, how worthy you are of love, the abiding, the right kind of genuine, connecting, intimate love. You will not find that with a gay man.
You will not find it.
That's not to say
he can't love you. I mean, but he's going to love you like he loves his sister. You need
yeah.
to be a wife, not a sister to somebody that you marry, right?
Yeah, you don't want to marry your sister. You don't want to marry a man that you could be a great roommate with, you know. But that's not the point of getting married. You don't want to just have a platonic roommate. You don't want to just have a business partner. You don't just want somebody to help you pay the rent, light bill. You don't just want
exactly.
a father for your kids. You want somebody that you can be vulnerable with, and I think that's the issue. You cannot be vulnerable with a gay man and it be responded to like a lover would respond to your vulnerability. You can't.
And, you know, just to add to that, you know, I really wanted to let people know a little more, you know, about you and restarting over. But just to throw some more stuff in about me, because this is a special night for me, as I told you, because today is my 20-year anniversary with my soulmate.
Yay.
And I know, I'll say yay for that, too. Very yay. Yeah. And we're old. We're not young like you. You know, we're much older. And yet, you know, I'm still at 20 years, you know, madly in love with him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's quite a bit older than I am, but he's, you know, romantic and he's intimate and passionate. And in 20 years, it's just as strong as ever, you know, if not more so, because we know each other, we love each other, we respect each other, we laugh together, we're silly together, we're young at heart. And I was, you know, thinking about this earlier, the difference between my relationship with him and my gay husband. You know, when I was married to a gay man, you know, most of the nights I would say, you know, without hesitating, you know, and not exaggerating, a lot of nights I went to bed crying. You know, I was crying and my ex-husband was sleeping soundly and without conscious because he didn't feel guilty over anything. I was sitting and crying because I was so unhappy because I was rejected. And, you know, I was always walking on eggshells with him, worrying about what I'm going to say. Is it going to upset him? Is he going to love me even less? Is he not going to like what I say? So then he'll be mad at me and have another reason to reject me. And during those years of my marriage, you know, I was so totally non-productive because I was always being shut down and I always felt as though I couldn't do anything. I was afraid to leave my house because I was afraid when I would come back, who would be in there with him. And, you know, I really felt that if I just hung all over him, then that would stop those feelings and those urges that he was having. That's how naive I used to be. But the thing is that I was never growing. I was always, you know, withering and dying. Whereas when I met the man who I'm in love with now, I mean, he's been so encouraging and so inspirational. It's like every day I wake up happy knowing that he's in my life. Whereas opposed to before, every day I woke up sad, knowing I have another day to exist. And I could have never been where I am today without the encouragement and the love. I mean, not saying that I wouldn't be anywhere, but it's just so much further that I've gotten because I have someone who loves me and who validates the fact that, you know, I'm worthy of that love, that I'm somebody who's so lovable, you know, because he shows it to me in every possible way. And so for me, 20 years of making it with a man like this makes a whole difference in who you become. You know, a happy human being who can produce and be productive in life, right?
Yes, and I love that analogy of going from withering to flourishing. And I think that's the key because, let's face it, the older we get, the less we will be able to have raucous sex like we did when we were in our 20s and 30s. The way that we express our intimacy sexually changes as we get older, and our bodies just cannot operate the way that they used to. So a lot of times people will say, well, you know, it's just sex, and a lot of times gay husbands will make that look like because you want them to be sexual. That issue is like, well, you know, there are many relationships that don't have sex as often. It is true, but the energy, the sexual energy is still there, whether it's being actually performed or not, such that it still gives you that flourishing base. You still feel, that person still looks at you. It's this involuntary thing I have found that a heterosexual male that is attracted to a woman's eyes do. His eyes honor your femininity when he looks at you. There are times when my Robert, when I walk toward him, his eyes involuntarily check me out. It's an energy.
It is.
The person touches me, I feel the energy. So even if we go for a week or whatever because one of us is sick or one of us is busy or whatever and we don't have intercourse, I still don't feel like I'm lacking because I still am held up by the sexual energy.
And it's not only that, though, Suzette. It's not just the sexual energy because, you know, I went with my boyfriend. There was a period of time when he was going through a terrible illness, and we didn't know how it would end up, which thankfully it ended up fine because sexually we're still extremely active, which is amazing for old people. But the thing is that we had, even if we didn't have the sexuality for a while, it was a number of months, you know, when he went through this illness. We still had the intimacy that we had built up. And that's something that I never had with my gay husband. It was never like, let me come here and hold you and cuddle and, you know, touch you and, you know, just feel good laying with you. It was like they couldn't he couldn't wait to run away from me. And as I tell women, you know, self-esteem doesn't matter how you look, because when I met my gay husband, I was 100 pounds less than I am now, and I looked really darn good. But, you know, my boyfriend hasn't noticed. He looks at me and he says, why are you always worried about your weight? He says, there's just more of you to love, more of you to cuddle. You know, and I think to myself, you must be really going blind because you're getting older. But, okay, I'll take the compliment.
Because I know he's in love with you.
He is. And I'm saying he doesn't care. He doesn't notice if I'm 50 pounds lighter, 50 pounds heavier. He never noticed in between. But I notice it, but he always says, stop worrying about it. He said, you're beautiful to me. So when somebody says that to you, how can you not feel wonderful about yourself as opposed to, I don't want you laying too close to me on the bed. You know, don't come over here and don't keep bothering me. Why are you asking me for sex? What's wrong with you? Are you a nymphomaniac? You know, those were all the things I used to hear that made me feel so inadequate as a woman.
Yeah, and you know what? And to add to what you're saying, what you would hear and their body language, because with my ex, I felt like I could not surprise kiss him. I could not surprise touch him. It's almost like you almost felt like you had to send him a message. Okay, don't be startled by this, but I'm going to lean in and kiss you now. Is the way I felt with him, because he would he would be startled by my affection, my touching. It'd be like, okay, yeah, you can kiss me, but it was like he wanted to control the kiss. He could kiss me intimately because he knew he could stop it. But the idea, he had to control it. And with this relationship, there is no control. There is no
manipulating,
directing the traffic of the intimacy. I can kiss his shoulder. I can kiss his lips. I can lay my head on him. I can put my feet on him, and next thing I know, he's lifted my foot in his hand. And he's kissed my foot. There is just this sense of just freedom. I think that's it. There's a freedom.
It's natural. That's what it is. It's something that just comes naturally, and that you don't have to pretend it, or you don't have to anticipate it. You don't have to think it out first before I do it. Because I know that when I had my gay husband, I was always thinking, if I do this, then this is going to happen. If I do that, this is going to happen. If I say this, he's going to get mad. If I don't say this, he's going to get mad. You know, it's like you have to analyze every move you're making when you have a gay husband.
Indeed, and you don't have to. It's funny. It's like you don't have to. I was going to say something profound, but I think I just lost my train of thought when you were talking. If something came to me, it'll come back to me. But it goes along with what you're saying. There is the freedom in it. There is the freedom to be who you are, to feel how you need to feel, without being afraid that there's going to be some type of retaliation.
And that's what it is, retaliation. If you don't do what I want you to do, fine, but you're going to pay the price. And so they just learn how to mute you down. You know, I always say, you know, they know how to make a mute out of you. You're afraid to say anything because you're always afraid it's going to be the wrong thing, right?
Yeah, I just remember what I was going to say. You're not afraid of losing. You're not afraid of losing. If he does have sex with you, you're not afraid of losing that feeling. You're not afraid that after the sex is over, it's as if somebody shut the door, shut the book, and it didn't happen. You're not afraid of losing that feeling that you had when he finally did touch you, when he finally did have sex. It's not just a single act. I did the act. I was involved in the act. Now it's over, and there is no lingering affection. One thing I've learned with a person that's really in love with you, after the sexual act, there's a lingering of that closeness. Whereas when I would have those rare occasions when I did have sex with my gay husband, there was no lingering. The act was
done.
That
was over. That was it. Right.
Yeah.
Not only that, but when you have a gay husband, after you do have sex, because I like to call it having sex versus making love, you know, after you do have sex, then you don't have to sit and wonder, when's the next time this is ever going to happen? Will it happen in a month or in 2 months, right?
You say that. Oh, my God. And that would be the torture. It would get to a point where I almost didn't want to have it, because on the other side of that, as soon as it was over, it was like, are we going to ever do this again?
Exactly.
I had to walk away. Instead of walking away feeling full, I'd walk away feeling like I'm going to starve again. Yeah, you fed me. But now, like I was using that analogy last time, starving in the grocery store.
Exactly. And no woman wants to have to feel sexually humiliated by wanting the man to keep touching her, and he doesn't want to.
Exactly.
Because it is a personal rejection of you, no matter what he tells you. There are only so many headaches and backaches and toothaches a man can have. You know, only so much pressure any job can bring you. So there has to be a time when he wants you, and if he doesn't, you're not looking at it that there's something wrong with him. You're looking at it that there's something wrong with you, right?
Exactly. And it goes to redefining what a good man is, because I hear from many people, whether they're heterosexual people that I'm coaching or people who are struggling in marriages where there is no intimacy or they don't feel validated in that way. I keep hearing, but he's a good man. But he's a good man. And I'm like, let's revisit what's good. Because a good man would not exploit you in that way. He would not exploit you in that way.
Look how many of our women get, you know, they get sexually transmitted diseases from their husbands. Because, you know, they're out there doing things, and then they leave that gift that never goes away, the gift of sexually transmitted disease, altering your sexuality for the rest of your life.
Exactly.
You know, because I know women, I feel so bad in our network. They say, I'm never going to meet someone. What do you mean you're not going to meet someone? How can I meet somebody? I have a sexual, you know, I have this, I have, you know, herpes, I have HIV, you know, whatever the sexually transmitted disease is that, you know, it's so terrible for them, and I'm not going to tell you that, you know, they don't ever meet someone, because sometimes after a number of years it's controllable, but there's always that barrier there. There's always something extra you have to keep in mind, and some men don't want to deal with it at all. So
yeah, it's like they're giving you the gift of shame.
Yeah, exactly, and it's their shame, but they're giving it to you from their lies and from not being doing the right thing.
Yeah, and it's also the emotional exploitation, because many of the women have told their husbands how they feel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they told their husbands that they want to be touched. They told their husbands, they ask them, why don't you want to have sex with me? They have, and the husbands like give them some random reason, like, well, baby, you know. I know one of the reasons my ex gave me in front of another couple, which was one of the most humiliating things that had ever happened in our relationship. We had a couple that we were friends with, and we started having things started coming to a head. I started really getting to a place where all the excuses that I gave myself for hanging in there with him were no longer working. And it was getting to a place where I was just getting tired of the coldness, getting tired of his knee-jerk reactions whenever I got ready to touch him. I just gotten tired of all the reasons that he gave me for our sexless cold marriage.
Uh-huh.
And I remember I brought this couple in, and we were very honest with them. And one of the things he said to me, and in their company, he said, "Baby, I don't want to hurt you. You know I love you, and I don't want to hurt you, but I have to be honest. Since we're saying that we have to be honest and all that so that we can get help, sometimes you just don't smell good, you know, and it just makes me not want to touch you. And baby, I don't want to hurt you, but sometimes you have an odor. You know, sometimes you don't smell good, and it just turns me off." And I never forget how I felt so humiliated. But yet, after that was over, I would take a shower. I would put on nice-smelling perfume. And he still didn't want me. And to me, that's
And you know what?
So
this is what hurts me so much, listening to you say that. Because, you know, a number of our women, you know, some of them wrote in our last book, you know, the gay husbands say the darndest things.
Yeah.
A number of them in there mentioned the same things, is that their husbands told them that, you know, they had bad body odor, bad breath, bad this, you know, they smelled bad. And the funny thing is, it's true. To a gay man, a woman does smell bad. So instead of us understanding that, uh-oh, this is a sign that this man is not straight, we personalize it because they can't accept responsibility. And trust me, we don't smell good to gay men at all. This is not a smell. They use all kinds of derogatory terms with straight women, such as the word fish, which I really get so angry at when I hear gay men say that. Oh, they smell like fish.
That's it. That was it. And you know what I found out when I had sex with a heterosexual man? He said, "No, that's the odor that turns us on, because
exactly,
your body is emitting your attraction for me, and I'm responding in kind."
Exactly. But our women don't understand that. And I think that's the most hurtful thing that any man could do to a woman, is to make her feel as if there is something that, you know, personal wrong with her, when it has nothing to do with her.
Nothing
and these men, and I'll be honest with you, these men, I don't think it's really a forgivable thing. I really don't.
Yeah. It's very exploited, and it's very demeaning. That's why I tell women, you got to reevaluate what a good man is, because a good man would not humiliate you. He really would not. Because even though I might not smell good to a gay man, there's still this humiliation that you are willing to stay with me for your reasons, knowing that I'm miserable, and yet you say you love me.
No, exactly.
Mm-mm.
That's not love.
That's not love.
Just pure selfishness and, you know, self-centeredness, because they're too afraid to. They'd rather knock you down than to tell the truth about themselves. What does that say about them?
And they'd rather knock you down to keep up appearances. Whatever appearances.
Exactly.
They want to
they'd
keep
rather you
up.
Take the blame for something that isn't your fault. And you want to tell me this is how they love? That's not called
That's
love.
It's not love.
Uh-uh.
It is not love. But believe me, that's one of the hardest things to coach in this situation. All the excuses, all the denial, all the excuses you might give a person just because they talk nice to you when they say it. My ex never said that to me in a mean way, but I still felt the hurt of it.
Right. It doesn't matter if you deliver a horrible message in a nice way. I mean, you can walk up to somebody and say, "Oh, guess what? What? Oh, your mother just died. Isn't that a shame?" I mean, that's a nice way, delivering bad news. it doesn't change the hurtfulness of what the news is.
It doesn't
and I don't
change.
Care that your husband said, baby, baby, I love you, but I got to tell you this. No, you don't love her.
Mm-mm.
Don't tell me you love your love somebody when you're talking and bringing up something that, unless, you know, I mean, I'm not saying you don't smell in his mind because you're a woman.
Right.
But why can't he see that it's him and not you that's the issue?
And to do that in front of...
In front of people, right?
I felt so humiliated.
Are you still in touch with those people?
No, their marriage ended up breaking up, too, because it was so funny. It's when he said that, the woman in the other couple said, Suzette, don't take that bad because my husband has said that to me, too.
Oh, well, then he was gay, too.
You know, and it's so interesting.
She had a gay husband also, Suzette.
Isn't that the most interesting thing? It's like, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And we'll tell ourselves, well, no, he's just particular. You know, he's just particular. But we need to stop making excuses for what we allow that makes us feel like we've been kicked in our gut time and time again.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless
Absolutely.
Of whether you need to do it, if you're still slapping me or making me feel kicked in the gut, I've got to remove myself from being kicked in the gut. Whether you see it or not, I'm the one that's bearing that pain. So...
Exactly. Like I said, there's no excuse why any woman should have to go to bed crying at night for being in a marriage.
Exactly.
That makes no sense. And to me, there's no, what's even worse that bothers me even more, since you're onto my pet peeves now, are women who have to take medication to stay in their marriage. This really upsets me. Does that upset you?
Oh, yeah. Or you got to either take medication or have some way to be able to tolerate it, whether you're a workaholic, whether you're
mm-hmm.
a churchaholic, whether you,
mm-hmm.
you got to get found in something else just so you can tolerate being in that marriage or being in that union. Something's wrong.
So some women turn to alcohol, some women turn to drugs. You know, and they'll do anything not to have to face the fact they have to leave.
Yeah.
They will numb themselves to stay in that marriage. You know, and instead of numbing themselves, they could take that opportunity to try to improve their lives, get a better job, go to school, learn a skill so you don't have to be so codependent on a man who can never make you happy.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. So true. So true.
I know. I feel so bad. And then look at the children. If you have children and you're always, you know, trying to numb yourself on either, you know, medications or drugs or alcohol, how are those children, what are they learning from this? I mean, what are the lessons we're teaching our children when we have to zonk ourselves out to stay somewhere?
That's right. They learn it. And we think that because they don't marry somebody gay, that there is no fallout. But the issue is, in their relationships, they're going to do the very same thing. If it
mm-hmm.
took you none of them to stay in denial about what's wrong in your relationship, your kids in some way, shape, and form are going to numb themselves in denial about what's wrong in their relationship, whether it's a heterosexual one or a homosexual one.
Oh, absolutely. There's plenty of male predators out there who are straight. And
exactly.
usually children who come from dysfunctional families end up with them because
yeah.
they haven't learned how family interaction is supposed to be. They're usually very needy themselves. And when you live with parents who are always fighting, that lowers your self-esteem because you always feel like you're the problem behind the fighting. So you're just ripe for picking for some other predator. So we're not setting
mm-hmm.
any examples at all for our children by doing this. They need mothers who are healthy in mind and spirit. And you know what?
Yeah.
I always say you can struggle as a single parent. I did it. You did it. You know, we managed as single parents, and maybe We couldn't be the best mother in every way because we were busy working and trying to manipulate everything, but we were good mothers. We did the best we could with what we had to deal with. But at least our children knew that we loved them and that we weren't going to keep them in abusive situations just because we were afraid to leave and blame it on them and tell them, well, we're not leaving because of you.
Yeah.
And I have plenty of adult children who come to me and say, I feel so guilty because my parents stayed together and my mother was miserable. And, you know, she said she had to stay there because of the children. And so, you know, she missed out on the years of her happiness because, you know, she had to take care of me. No, that's not a message you want to give your children, is it?
No, it's not. And it's so funny, I was thinking when you said adult children, I know there's literature out there, adult children of alcoholics.
Mm-hmm.
Adult children, I think it needs to be when it says adult children of gay marriages.
Mm-hmm.
Or, because there are certain things that they have to deal with, certain issues that they have to
absolutely
work through. That are very unique.
Exactly. And I always encourage parents, you know, your kids are screwed up from these marriages. It doesn't matter how good a mother you are. There's
mm-hmm.
so many issues that our children have that we haven't recognized, that now that we started our adult, you know, children group, it's been wonderful meeting some of these, you know, young adults or adults and listening to what they're going through. And I get letters every week from them telling me, you know, that they realized now they were the keeper of the secret, they were caught in between two parents, they were living somebody's lie. How can they trust in their own relationships, questioning their own sexuality? You know, so many other issues that people who have, you know, straight parents who get divorced don't have to deal with. I mean, every kid who comes from a divorce has issues, but not these issues, right?
They grow up tolerating the elephant in the living room, but
mm-hmm.
acting like it's not there. They're afraid. It's like they grow up with that elephant, but
mm-hmm.
they act like it's not there. Yeah.
Well, but they don't know how to act even more than we don't know how to act.
That's right.
You know, they're our children. We're supposed to be there taking care of them. They're not supposed to be there taking care of us.
So
but,
very
you know,
true.
Unfortunately, a lot of them feel that need to protect their mothers or protect their fathers. Or if they say anything, their family's going to break up and they're going to be the ones at fault. And especially
yeah.
when their fathers tell them, make sure your mother doesn't find out because then we might have to break up our happy family.
Yeah.
You know, and they've grown up with all of these lines, and it's so sad to me that people do this to children. You know, it's one thing to do it to your wife, which is bad enough, but then when you have children, you do it to them also. I don't get it. Like, these men have no conscience.
Yeah. Yeah, and just because the child does not catch you in the act, just because, you know, you by appearances, everything looks right. I have learned children are very intuitive. They might not know what's off about it.
Mm-hmm.
But they're reacting to what they can't see. They are reacting to
you know
to
what?
The
today
off-
kids know a lot more than we knew, Suzette. And even if
yeah.
they don't catch you in the middle of it, I can't tell you how many of them caught their dads with the gay porno. Or
mm-hmm.
how many of them knew there was something wrong in the marriage because the father was never, you know, intimate with the mother and always
mm-hmm.
critical, you know, beyond others. Their parents didn't act like other parents acted. You know, when you grow up seeing what love really is and then you look in your own home and you don't see it, you know something's wrong. Or they
mm-hmm.
may see, you know, their dad's looking at a guy in a couple seconds too long. You know, certain looks that they give out, and they don't think the kids are seeing it, but they're seeing it when they know something's wrong to start with.
And they may grow up emotionally detached, not understanding why.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, they do. They're very torn
mm-hmm.
and very guilty.
Mm-hmm. Quite detached. And
mm-hmm.
not knowing
in fact, I'm really excited because in February, Jason, who runs our adult, you know, group, Adult Children
mm-hmm.
of Gay Parents, he's going to be a guest on the show. And also he's coming to Houston to do a workshop because parents really need to know how these marriages affect their children.
Yeah.
And as painful as it is to hear it, if you love your children, you have to want to fix them also, not, you know, fix yourself, but you ought to help work, you know, for your kids to get fixed also. Yes. Because this will affect their relationships. They're going to make bad choices just like you did. They have to know how to look at those bad choices and say, I made a mistake, I need to get out. And do it. You know, not linger and linger, because you spent 20, 30 years, you know, lingering in a marriage that wasn't the right marriage for you. I always tell people you have to be a role model, right?
Yeah, and it teaches them, because they don't realize that they've been living in the closet that their parents helped to construct. There's a closet in here, and to let them know that they can come out of the closet. Because closets, whether they're, you know, hiding their sexuality, hiding, whatever, they need to learn that they can come out of hiding and not get buried in the layers of old clothes and emotions and whatever, where they shut down and isolate emotionally, isolate sexually, isolate in some way. They need to know that they can come out of that and how to interact in a healthy way outside of the closet. Yeah. Yeah. Because even though I'm engaged in all of that, Bonnie, it's still been a journey. The longer that I am with this man, and he is a wonderful man, the more that I realize areas in my heart and in my life that are needing to be healed, that are being exposed, just because I'm in a relationship where I can breathe. I'm getting oxygen in those areas, and I'm having to bring them to the forefront so they can be healed. So it takes, it's been a journey. It has truly been a journey. But every time I come to that place where life is having me to relinquish some mistrust or some area of control, I am able to breathe even more fully and attain an even greater sense of freedom and liberation.
And I think it's really important. I was going to say, I think it's important for you to understand, because now that you are seriously involved and you've been with him for a while, how long is it now, 2 years, 2.5 years since you met?
Yeah.
And it's been a wonderful time, but I'm sure you're going to find this if you haven't found it yet, there's always that residual scarring from our previous marriage that will come up in any relationship until we really feel so secure that we can put it behind us. I mean, I know in my relationship, I would say for the first 10 years, I mean, I didn't know how to communicate. I was afraid to ask for anything because I was afraid I'd be rejected again.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes my boyfriend used to say to me, and I've written about this in my past newsletters, and I can look back at them and laugh now, but he would say to me, okay, I know you're mad. What are you mad about? And I was, you know, I'd be afraid to say anything. I said, well, you should know what I'm mad about. Well, how would I know if you don't tell me? Well, you should know, yes, you're Mr. Mind Reader. Shouldn't you know everything that I'm angry about, which probably has nothing to do with you but my own insecurities? And that's a problem, learning that communication, learning that trust, learning that we can say something without fear of repercussion that somebody's going to run away from us because they did before.
Yes. Yes.
Do you ever come up with those? Were you ever thinking that too?
Oh, girl. Every time our relationship enters into another level of deepening intimacy or commitment, I go through a sudden shakedown emotionally, where those things come to the surface at a deeper level, and they have to be dealt with inside. I mean, because when he proposed, honestly, when he proposed, I was tickled, giddy. And at some point in the talks about the future or whatever, I'd have that, does he really know what he's getting? Is he really going to be committed, waiting for that other shoe to drop feeling, wrestling with that, and having mm-hmm. to tell myself the truth. Girl, he loves you, and pointing to all the reasons, all the things that he's done, that he's shown you that he loves you and that you can trust it for the long haul. I have to put myself through that.
You'll probably take yourself through it a lot of other times, Suzette. You know, like I say, every time something may not be quite right, once again, you put yourself back where you once were. Of course,
yeah.
each time it gets shorter and shorter because you get more confidence as, you know, you get built up. But these
yeah,
are things that all of us face,
and
you know, when you're damaged from a marriage,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, and his response is what continues to heal and cleanse those areas because he never retaliates against me.
Mm-hmm.
He may react, but he never retaliates. And there's a difference.
Exactly.
Because we get afraid of the reaction. But the thing about it is he's human. He's human, so he's going to react. The difference, however, is that he doesn't abandon. He doesn't
that
retaliate.
That is so true. That's exactly
yeah.
true. Even with mine, you know, as I told you earlier, 95% of my relationship has been the best in the world. You know, everybody has, you know, some downtime. You don't agree on 100% of everything, you know, although we do almost agree now. But we've gone through some downtimes, miscommunications. But mm-hmm. he'll get angry or, you know, he'll withdraw for a day. But then he's back. You know, it's just
yeah.
that he's going through his own stuff, and he doesn't know how to react to my reactions all the time. But it's not like, you know, he's going to be mad about it or angry. He forgets it in life. We're back together, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Because even me and my fiancé, let me say fiancé, me and my fiancé
yeah.
have gone through couples counseling. Not
mm-hmm.
because we were fighting or, you know, not because of those types of things, but because that each level of intimacy required a deeper level of commitment. And when you're
mm-hmm.
afraid of abandonment issues, you can't commit.
Mm-hmm.
If you're afraid somebody's going to leave you, you can't commit. And so I was reacting to the mirror that the relationship was holding up.
Mm-hmm.
And so he suggested, he said, well, Suzette, you know, since this is new terrain for us both, let's go to somebody who can help us. Let's go to somebody who can help us. And one of the things that she said to us that has become a hallmark for our relationship, she said, fear is real. Fear is real when you're exposing an area of your heart and that person can hurt you. Fear is real. She said, what
mm-hmm.
you have to learn to do is manifest the love out of the fear.
Mm-hmm.
And she led us through manifesting love out of fear. And I learned instead of reacting to the fear, what I learned to do was to expose what I was really afraid of.
Mm-hmm.
And in my exposing what I was really afraid of, it gave him a chance to shine. Because then he would leave no doubt of what his intentions were. And we would walk through what I needed from him to reassure me. And he would do it in spades.
Uh-huh.
And so that would show me the depth of his love for me
uh-huh.
in that moment. He would leave no doubt. And so I'm so grateful that at every pivotal moment, he leaves no doubt. And
oh, I
every
think
time
that's
it heals me
right.
to a deeper level.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think it's wonderful. And, you know, I'm going to end the show by telling women at the beginning of the year, at the beginning of the new year of hope and new beginnings, that Suzette and I can testify to you that there is life after gay husband if you will allow
yes.
it there to be.
Yes,
and even
yes.
if it's not a relationship, just feeling good about yourself is good enough for a lot of women. Just feeling like they have that freedom to be who they really are, to refine themselves, to to learn who they are if they haven't learned that yet, and to change who they, what they don't like about themselves by working on it. And Suzette is the most inspirational coach you could ever ask for. You know, it's wonderful that she's my co-hostess once a month, but beyond that, I mean, she does a wonderful way of doing coaching with women to really help them get to that next step when they're stuck. And she's been so helpful to our women, you know, throughout the last few years in helping them. So, Suzette, let's tell them a few things about how they can contact you. First of all, Suzette is on my resource list on my page, gayhusbands.com. So rather than give her, you know, her address, you can just go there and click into her name and get her information how to get to her. Also, Suzette has a radio show once a week for her, you know, called Purposeful Connections, correct?
Yes, yes. I'm powering down to gear back up. So the month of January, they may not see anything, but in February, I'm looking forward to a new vitality to that radio. So
stay tuned. Well, then go to your back episodes also and go on to, you know, Blog Talk Radio and put in Suzette Hinton, and you'll see her shows come up. Also, they can buy your wonderful book. Let's talk about your book for a moment.
Sure. It's The Sound of My Life, and it's about my journey of self-discovery. A lot of people say, you know, especially in these situations where we've been married or in relationships with gay husbands, I lost my voice. But I think what happens is not so much that we lose our voice, we lose the ability to hear it. We lose the sound. And so my book is about how I reconnected with my own unique sound, the sound of my voice, and it leading me to a life, to a fulfilling life, which is the sound of my life. So it's a powerful.
And that's your goal for everybody, you know, everybody who works with Suzette. You know, she works with you to hear your voice again so that you know where you're going. And some people really benefit more from the coaching end of it than they do from therapy. It is a form of therapy, but it's one that focuses on what directions you need to go in now and how you're going to get to all those next steps with a, you know, coach on your side. So if you're looking for coaching, you know, you can go to Suzette's website and, you know, you'll get her information or contact me at bondk@AOL if you're having any trouble, you know, hooking up. But Suzette, before we end tonight, because it is our night to discuss our new beginnings in love, I do have a special song I'd like to play for you because of the fact that now that I'm able to learn, I learned how to download songs on here. I'm so excited. I don't need you anymore, Suzette. Well, I do need you for the show, but I just don't need you to download the songs anymore. I can do that myself. I feel like I've made such a major accomplishment in my life the last 2 weeks learning how to do this now, but I'm on top of it. But I'd like to play for our listeners and for you one of my – this is a song that when I met my soulmate, this song meant so much to me. It's an old song from the 1930s, but it's being sung by a wonderful singer. Her name is Ethel Waters. Have you heard of her?
Yes.
Yes, Ethel Waters is one of my favorite actresses. And she was in a movie called Cabin in the Sky. Have you ever heard of that movie?
I hadn't heard of that one.
Okay. Well, there was an era in Hollywood where these were the beginning of, you know, black films that were being made. And because black actors and black actresses couldn't get good parts in white movies, that was the reality of the situation. So in this time period, you know, a number of really great movies were made, like Stormy Weather, you know, with Lena Horne. But this one is called Cabin in the Sky, and this is like one of my all-time favorite movies, period. And I'm a very big fan of Ethel Waters. She's from Philadelphia. And she did such a great version of this song, and maybe you've heard it, and it's called Taking a Chance on Love. So now I'm going to play it from the movie. And it takes a few minutes, but I think you'll appreciate the sentiment, and everyone here who's starting off will, too. So I'll just play this for a few moments.
Okay.
And I'm sorry. That's the wrong thing.
Maybe a soldier stand up for you.
I'm sorry. I'm playing the wrong song.
When your world comes crashing down.
Sorry. That was the wrong one. No, I did download them, just hit the wrong button. Sorry, guys. Let's try again. All right, let me try this one. Again.
I hear
the trumpets blow again.
All aglow
again.
Taking a chance
on love.
Here I slide again. About to take that ride again.
Starry eyes again.
Taking a chance on love. I thought the cards were a frame up. Now I'm taking the game up, and the ace of hearts is high. Things are mending now, I see a rainbow blending now. We'll have our happy ending now, taking a chance on love. Here I slip again, I'm gonna take that tip again. Got my grip again, taking a chance on love. And now I prove again that I can make life move again. In the groove again, taking a chance on love. I'm walking round with a horseshoe, and in clover I lie. Why, Mr. Rabbit, of course you better kiss your foot goodbye. On the ball again, I'm riding for a fall again. I'm gonna give my all again, taking a chance on love. I'm feeling fine again, that's why I'll rise and shine again. You like that song? I loved it.
My favorite song. Have you heard it before?
You know, I hadn't. I hadn't heard it before.
Well, you are a little young, but it's still relevant, isn't it? Taking a chance on love. Here I go again. I'm about to, you know, take that chance again.
Yes.
I'll be sending you the. Yeah, when we hang up, so you can watch Ethel Waters. And also in it was another very famous actor. His name was Eddie Rochester Anderson. I don't know if you remember ever hearing of him, but he was a very big actor. And it's a great story, so if you have a chance to rent the movie, you can watch it with Robert. I think the two of you will love it. It's a true love story.
Oh, yeah. He probably has heard about all of them because he loves black and white movies. So... He probably knows all about it.
Guy, to anybody who just wants to be entertained, you know, I say get that movie. So, Suzette, you and I have both taken a chance on love, and we're getting our payouts, right?
Yes, we are. I'm so grateful.
Yep, me too. So learning to love yourself is the first key, and then finding someone to love you is the next one.
Indeed.
So with that in mind, next time you come back, we'll be in our Valentine's month, so we can talk a little more about love.
Oh, that's great.
I know. When you're in love, it's so great talking about love. But I say that because a lot of our women always feel there's no chance that anything is ever going to happen for them, and I tell them that that's not the case, and they say, well, that's just you, Bonnie. I say, no, we have so many, many, many happily re-after stories of women who felt that they will never meet somebody again or they never want to meet somebody again, but one day their heart opens up and the right man tumbles in, and, you know, it's an adventure like you can never believe, but it could happen to you if you want it to happen, right?
Yes, and the truth of the matter is, as long as they stay with those gay husbands, it won't happen. But at least if you detach from that, there is a greater chance that it will happen.
Absolutely. As long as you're married to a gay man, it's not going to happen. So that's another good reason to say goodbye. All right. Well, without further ado, Suzanne, I can't wait to talk to you again next month. I hope you have a wonderful month.
Oh, same to you, Bonnie.
And to all of our listeners, have a wonderful new year. I like to say to people, a happier new year. I don't say happy. I say happier.
Happier.
Right?
Happier.
Let it get better and better every year.
Yes, it
does. So all of our listeners, keep in touch if you need me, bonk@aol.com. Suzette, I love you, and I'll be talking to you next month.
I love you.
I just want to mention to all our listeners, next week, I'm really excited, we have a wonderful guest who joins us every 3 months or 4 months, Mike from Linked Investigations. Suzette, I'm so glad you don't need him, but he's really so awesome for women who want to check and see, you know, if their husbands are cheating on them. He's been such an inspiration to our women as far as giving them really good advice on how to check out their husbands. He's the nicest guy you can ever imagine. I don't think he's single, though, but I'll ask him next week. I'll put him on the spot. He is handsome. I've seen his picture. He's in California, and I have some wonderful California women. Maybe I can make a match. But anyway, Mike will be with us next week. Yes, I will be putting him on the spot. Everybody can listen to that. All right, Suzette, I love you. And to all of our listeners, lots of love. And we'll be back next week. Good night.
Good night.